Tangling with Tate was more difficult. Schultz soon realized he had a tiger by the tail. Responding to questions relevant to his supposed intimacy with Mr. Clutter, the judge said he, Clutter, was once a litigant in this court, a case over which I presided, a damage action involving an airplane falling on his property. He was suing for damages to, I believe, some fruit trees. Other than that, I had no occasion to associate with him. None whatever. I saw him perhaps once or twice in the course of a year. Schultz, floundering, switched the subject. Do you know, he asked, what the attitude of the people was in this community after the apprehension of these two men? I believe I do, the judge told him with scathing confidence. It is my opinion that the attitude toward them was that of anyone else charged with a criminal offense, that they should be tried as the law provides, that if they were guilty, they should be convicted, that they should be given the same fair treatment as any other person. There was no prejudice against them because they were accused of crime. You mean, Schultz slyly said, you saw no reason for the court on its own motion to grant a change of venue? Tate's lips curved downward. His eyes blazed. Mr. Schultz, he said, as though the name was a prolonged hiss, the court cannot on its own grant a change of venue. That would be contrary to Kansas law. I couldn't grant a change unless it was properly requested. But why had such a request not been made by the defendant's attorneys? Schultz now pursued this question with the attorneys themselves, for to discredit them and prove that they had not supplied their clients with the minimum protection was, from the Wichita lawyer's viewpoint, the hearing's principal objective. Fleming and Smith withstood the onslaught in good style, particularly Fleming, who, wearing a bold red tie and an abiding smile, endured Schultz with gentlemanly resignation. Explaining why he had not applied for a change of venue, he said, I felt that since the Reverend Cohen, the minister of the Methodist Church, and a man of substance here, a man of high standing, as well as many other ministers here, had expressed themselves against capital punishment, that at least the leaven had been cast in the area, and there were likely more people here inclined to be lenient in the matter of the penalty than perhaps in other parts of the state. Then I believe it was a brother of Mrs. Clutter's who made a statement that appeared in the press indicating he did not feel the defendants should be put to death. Schultz had a score of charges, but underlying them all was the implication that because of community pressure, Fleming and Smith had deliberately neglected their duties.